It's all about girl power in this reel of COO movies, where the boys start off by going back in time to review the Tina Fey-written gym Mean Girls. After getting schooled, get it? They catch back up with Alice for some more ass-kicking as she tries to take down the Umbrella Corporation for the fifth time in Resident Evil Retribution. From there, we're off somewhere over the rainbow with James Franco and a triumvirate of extremely talented female actors as the witches in Sam Raimi's Oz, The Great and Powerful. In news, the Hobbit trilogy goes real-time, Joss Whedon talks about why he isn't exactly thrilled about Avengers 2, and the Looney Tunes are coming back to the big screen. It's the 123rd reel of COO movies. He's almost too gay to function.
I'm gonna make him an offer again.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Go ahead. Make my day.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
May the force be with you.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a brand spanking new reel of COO movies. My name is Jeff, and I would like to introduce my plastic co-hosts, Ray and Steve. How are you guys doing?
Sleepy.
Stop it.
I'm a probably bear husband.
That is such a nice nap beforehand. My voice is still a little, you know, cleaning up and sleeping, but yeah.
That is not fetch.
Finally, something that's actually related to one of our movies.
God, you guys are too gay to function.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Let's move on to the news. The news?
News on the mark!
Can't get enough of the Hobbit news? Considering it's been announced it will be a three-part series, we'll go to the blog.
Yes, I think I barely heard you, but I think that was correct. I was wandering around trying to find more information about the Hobbit trilogy that was announced, because he definitely made it clear it's going to be a trilogy now. And I actually got the names of the three movies, if you're interested. Sure. The first one is going to be The Hobbit, There and Back Again, scheduled for release July 18th, 2014.
Oh, that's the last one.
Oh, sorry. Wait, back again. Well, hold on a second. He put them in descending order. My fault. That was wrong. The first is going to be The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, December 14th.
You still need
then
that.
Then the next one will be The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug, December 13th, 2013. And then the final edition will be The Hobbit, There and Back Again, planned release for July 18th, 2014.
So basically, we got the two titles that we knew about, which was the Unexpected Journey and There and Back Again. But because they made it three, they put a different title for the middle one and kept the other two. So.
Okay. I'm struggling to hear you guys. But the other thing that I thought was interesting, as I was looking through this, one thing I found was that they have an active, updated daily blog that's going on regarding The Hobbit. If you go to thehobbitblog.com, which we have a link of here, you can look at information that's being posted real time, of pictures, comments on the productions from Peter Jackson, information from Warner Brothers. Updated trailers, things like that. So it's kind of interesting. I thought it's an interesting way of doing it rather than doing some kind of crazy website where you have to figure out what's going on. Right. Peter Jackson is just really honestly being like, we want our fans to see what's happening in the production and get excited.
Yeah, I think he did something similar with the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I don't know if he did it for the first movie, but I think after the first movie came out, he sort of started blogging about the production that was going along as they were still filming the other two and getting everything. So he's always been pretty transparent on his filmmaking, it seems. Mm-hmm. He likes to involve everybody, you know.
But it's definitely something that's interesting to get people really excited. You know, especially for a 2-year project. You know, we're not going to see the whole thing for the next over the next 2 years.
Right.
So, you know, as production is going on, it's pretty interesting. So, I give him some credit for there. So, if you are a Hobbit fan, check out thehobbitblog.com, and you can see all of what's coming up and see a lot of the characters. They've got a lot of the pictures of the characters, and it looks like they've been periodically releasing some of the characters so that you can get to know who they are before they come to the big screen.
They'll feel like old friends.
Exactly.
And a brand new and unexpected journey trailer. Released September 20th. That was posted on that blog, so check it out. Awesome. Next up, we've got Joss Whedon is waffled about the Avengers sequel. What does that mean?
Waffled?
No, no, waffled. Why was he waffling about Avengers 2?
Because he wasn't sure if he should have chicken and waffles. Wah! kidding. But no, seriously, though, Joss apparently has come forward to say that he initially was not excited about Avengers 2 and really considered not doing it because of just the general fact that he was not convinced he had another story in him. And that was the straight up thing. As he says in this article, as his quotes are, there's a business aspect to it, and I would be disingenuous to say that. But the question is for me, do I have another story to tell about these people? So he worked on the business side of it, and he didn't think that the story was going to come, basically. And then he was like, I'm never going to be able to do this again. But he said once everything kind of on the business side kind of panned out, he sat down, and he actually sat down in a pub in London and had some fish and chips and a pint and started writing notes in his notebook. And then, bam, 40 minutes later, he had filled ideas out. And so he texted his agent and said, make a deal. That he just basically has fallen in love with the characters in the universe and the way that they played. And he has so much more that he wants to do with them. So he doesn't know if he's going to be able to match the success of the first one, but he's going to try to make a better film. What? And that's what he's excited about.
I mean, can you imagine, like, just the sort of pressure that's on somebody when you have something that huge?
Yeah.
Like, of course, it's like, it could be an awesome movie, but if it doesn't do better than the first one, everyone's going to be like, well, that was a nice try, you know?
Right.
So there's a lot of pressure there. And I heard on a different article that he, you know, because they were talking about him directing that Shakespeare film, and that he considered that a vacation, and that he wasn't really, you know, wasn't only just the story that was worrying him too. He's just like, I'm not sure I'm ready to commit like another 2 years of my life. You know, he wasn't sure he wanted to make that sort of commitment again, especially when you have like this giant gorilla of a film that you're expected to like surpass. I mean, that's got to be daunting.
I would agree with that, but you know, but I think he did a good job. I mean, he didn't just, what's interesting here is that he's saying, I didn't have to take this. I didn't feel forced into taking it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you would think that a production company, or you would think that, you know, the folks behind Marvel would definitely be saying, you know, Joss, you're doing the next movie, you know, somehow.
Well, I mean, it all depends on what his deal is. I mean, I'm sure they're going to be like, hey, you know, that first one we all did really well. And, you know, yeah, we want you to make a second one. But how about we, you know, how about we commit to making, you know, two more?
Yeah.
You know, the studio is always kind of like, hey, if we can lock this guy in for two movies. So it's all that little bit of a gamble there on that whole movie making business, you know.
I kind of think it was cool, though, that he didn't enter a 2 or 3 year deal in some ways.
I mean, he's always been sort of a independent sort of guy. I mean, you know, the fact that he would do something like Dr. Horrible sing-along blog and self-fund it, basically, and just put it out there. I mean, I think it's kind of shown that he likes to create, and he'll do whatever he needs to do to create. It's not like he feels, you know, I don't think he ever felt tied to a studio or you know, obligated in any such way. So mm-hmm. I'm sure when he approached the Avengers, I can't see him being the kind of person that's kind of like, I'm going to lock this in for three movies or, you know. Yeah.
Well, I think he would actually do something like that if he knew he had something in him to tell. You know, he's about being able to make a quality story, not about just be making movies, but making quality stories. It's like, as he said, I wasn't sure I had a story to tell for Avengers 2. So I don't want to say I'm going to do it if I have absolutely no idea what I'm going to do.
Right.
Until I have something. I mean, as he said, sit down, had some fish and chips and a bite and, you know, figured out, yes, I have a story here. And who knows? I mean, he filled up an entire notebook. Did that entire notebook actually encompass one movie? Maybe it included, you know, here's one story, here's another story, and let's tell those two stories. One movie, another movie. So he could lock in a two-deal. But if he only had one story worth of notes, then he'll be like, nope, let's do one, and then we'll figure out the other one later. And heck, like comic books, I mean, it's a comic book movie, for Christ's sakes. There's different writers that come on books all the time. They'll have a writer come in, tell a story. They're done with that story. A new writer comes in for the next series of issues. So, and I still feel that they could do a similar thing with Avengers. They just need to be able to find the right stories, the right actors. And I think Marvel has pretty much locked in what they want to do with that, with just the way they've been progressing through the movie since Iron Man, the first Iron Man, is they're like, okay, we want to have some sort of connection, but they're individual movies. And we want to make sure we have storytellers in place that want to tell these stories and tell good stories. So they wouldn't just, you know, willy-nilly have anybody do the next movie. They're going to be like, okay, so Joss doesn't have any more stories that he wants to tell at this time. Who knows? Maybe he's going to be back because he'll end up coming up with one later. Mm-hmm. But there's this other director who does a great job and wants to tell a story with the Avengers. And the story they have is great. And, you know, and it goes through all the P's and Q's. So it's a balance between the creators and the, you know, the owners of the property, because they're also creating this, because I don't think that anything that Joss would do would still have to go through Marvel approval. But I think Marvel puts also their trust in the creator. So it's kind of like a back and forth kind of thing, and help make sure everything's good and connecting.
Well, you got to think that as far as a creative person, you know, somebody like Joss Whedon, he's somebody that I would consider a very comic book friendly, you know, if I'm going to pick somebody that I want to helm my movie and I'm a studio like Marvel or even DC, I think I would be like, yeah, I would have no problem giving this guy the reins and sort of some creative freedom. I don't think he's going to go in a direction that we wouldn't approve of. That being said, I think there's almost a guaranteed sort of win, at least an opening weekend win with the Avengers sequel, because I'm pretty sure unless the trailer is absolutely horrible, everybody who saw the Avengers is going to see a sequel.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Whether or not they see it two or three times, like a lot of people did, it will remain to be seen, you know. But I think it's going to be like that. I think, you know, whatever Avengers movie comes out next, be it a Joss Whedon movie or somebody else directing it, I think it would be an initial success regardless. It's just a matter of how long it can hold on to it again, which the Avengers just was like a never unstoppable train that just kept going weekend after weekend. You know, I could still go to a first run movie theater and see it right now if I wanted to, you know, which is pretty amazing.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, with that being said, talking about sequels, okay, now I'm going to admit I've never seen Space Jam.
I've never seen all of it. I'll be honest with you. Not the whole thing.
I mean, I'm not that big of a Looney Tunes guy, and obviously I think most people would know I'm not very much of a sports dude, so a basketball Looney Tunes movie never really ever appealed to me. I guess there was another Looney Tunes movie between that. I don't I don't remember.
I don't think I've seen it. Looney Tunes Back in Action, I think it is.
Yeah, which I guess was a big flop. But they're going to give it another go. They're going to have a full-length, full-feature film, and it's going to be another live-action CG sort of hybrid movie. What is sort of interesting is the sort of team they're assembling. You've got some producers from Dark Shadows and Abraham Lincoln, as well as Harry Potter. So kind of definitely an interesting production team. But what's really remains to be seen, and I'm not that familiar with SNL people, this Jenny Slate, she's going to be writing the script. And I don't know if she, I don't know who she is, if she was funny. Maybe if somebody showed me a clip, I'd recognize her. But I'm not that big of an SNL guy anymore, so.
You know what I'd love to see? I would love to see them to release a Looney Tunes bit, which is basically just a series of their cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the theater. So, like, when we went to see the Wile E. Coyote, or went to see Cats and Dogs, The Revenge of Kitty Glore, we watched Coyote Falls, the Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner sketch, which I thought was hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
I was the only person laughing in the theater at that time, and we had a bunch of kids, and I think the adults, other adults were chuckling, but I was guffawing, so
yeah,
I really enjoyed that.
Looney Tunes type of cartoon, I don't think kids these days really understand Looney Tunes, because cartoons for the last, you know, decade or more have not been the sort of Looney Tune-esque sort of cartoon. Now there's been stuff like the Animaniacs and things like that.
Animaniacs is still back in the 90s. That's a long time ago still.
Right. But that's why I'm saying the last decade or so, cartoons have not been that sort of smart.
And they're half hours, maybe 2 15-minute, you know, right, or 2 12-minutes, not like 2 3-minute, you know, little mini episodes and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm really care that enough. There's going to be another Looney Tunes movie. I'm not sure exactly how. That's kind of unfortunate. I'm not really sure how relevant some of these characters are anymore, and that's not a fault of the characters. I think it's a fault of them not really being marketed and put out there. Like, you know, I Looney Tunes was just a way of life when I was a kid, you know.
Yeah.
And they're not,
and
so
it,
much
and it maybe. Was well yeah and that was and it was for about what about 30, 40 years there.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knew who Looney Tunes was when it came, because they came out in what, the 30s ish, late 30s. Yeah, but still, you know, for that 30, 40 years, you know, everybody knew who they were. And then they kind of died off in the late 80s. They tried to bring them back a couple of times without the same success, but you still know who some of the characters are, you know. You know, like Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner in a Geico commercial.
Yes, the 1930s.
Yep.
Whew, that's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies from 1934 to 1943.
Nice.
Yeah. Old school.
And they were so funny, too.
Well, it's, again, it's a time when cartoons, I think, were made sort of. And that's one of the things that makes the Animaniacs so brilliant, is that, yes, the Animaniacs were a kids' cartoon show, but it so worked for adults, too, because they were able to sort of sneak in adult humor, you know, that holds up. And that's kind of one of the things I always remember about the Looney Tunes. Of course, I didn't know that when I was a kid watching it, but watching it again when you're older, you're kind of like, oh, look at all these little double entendres and all these little kind of crazy situations that they're putting these things in. It's not really stuff that kids are going to understand, but they'll think it's funny, you know. So I would like to see them sort of go in a more dare I say, adult direction. I think that would be kind of funny. You know, I don't want to see
more.
I don't want to see Looney Tunes porn or anything, but I'm just saying.
Like Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yes.
Go that way.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Like where they're all like, we're tired of pandering to kids. Damn it.
Mm-hmm.
They're all
disgruntled, mad that they've been abandoned and forgotten.
You know? Muppets movie, like a Muppets movie ish.
Sure enough, yeah.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yep.
And with that, let's move into the past.
You're telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Mean Girls. 83% fresh, 66% audience. Directed by Mark Waters, starring Lindsay Lohan, Lindsay Lohan, Rachel McAdams, and Tina Fey. And written by Tina Fey, too, wasn't it?
Yes.
Screenplay.
Lindsay Lohan, before she came, became a big mess.
Oh, my gosh. I laughed. Did you watch, did either of you have the Blu-ray by chance?
No.
Or watch any?
I watched it streaming.
Well, it came on streaming this past week. I was like, it was on streaming at one point, and it was off. I was like, yay, that worked out. No, I had gotten the Blu-ray because I have the DVD in storage, and I wanted to see what the Blu-ray had on it. And they had a little funny little thing on there where Lindsay was talking about that, and it says in the notes, of course, that she was offered Regina at first.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said something about, you know, at that time she was, you know, she didn't want to be seen as a mean girl, and she was afraid that people would see her that way in the real world. So she decided that she wanted to take the nice role. And so she advocated for her to take the Katie role instead, which I think is horrible.
Hello?
Whoa. Where'd he go?
Steven? We lost you.
Hello, Steven. Oh, okay. He disappeared on my end, too. He just stopped.
Ah, there we go. But, okay.
But we'll hope Please he calls back.
No technical difficulties.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to take a nap. No, I'm not going to take a nap. Had you seen this before, Jeff?
What?
This movie.
I'm back.
Mean Girls? Yeah. Oh.
I tried finding you.
I got confused. No, this is a first watch for me, too.
Yeah, it's a first watch for me. I had actually never seen Mean Girls before.
We finally got that punch on our gay card.
Wow, I'm kind of surprised.
Yeah, a lot of people are. I don't know why I remember when this came out and thinking it was, you know, I should probably go see that because it looks, you know, funny. And, you know, what do we like to call this? This is the revenge girl genre, like the, you know, the high school girls battling it out genre. which always up for a good one of those, you know. So, yeah, I was really shocked that, you know, I was like, when you put it on the list, I'm like, yeah, I've never seen it. But I really, you know, started watching it, of course, you know, it's funny. And then for me, you know, a big part of it, even though I grew up on the complete opposite side of the city, I'm sort of familiar with the North Shore area, which is where this is set. So just seeing all the little homages and things they put in the dialogue to talk about the North Shore. And the North Shore is a very, very affluent sort of area. There's a lot of rich people up there on the North Shore. So, they didn't really even come out and say where it was, but when she said that, you know, my mom got a job at, you know, Northwestern University, I was like, oh, okay, I know where this is at, you know. So yeah, that was kind of cool for me to kind of catch all the little. And the weird thing is, I did some research because I'm looking around and I'm like, Tina Fey wrote it, but Tina Fey didn't grow up in Chicago.
No, but she spent a good time in Chicago.
Yeah,
a lot of time in Chicago after graduation.
Right. Yeah,
she did Second City.
Right.
Yeah.
But I was like, the original book that it's based on wasn't based in Chicago either, which is sort of funny. I just thought it was funny that she decided to make it part of the North Shore. I guess it just sort of made sense, and it fits into that sort of culture up there.
Mm-hmm. You know.
But, yeah.
You know, so, well, how do we put this, all this? Well, I figured first and foremost we need to, you know, handle the elephant in the room, which is going to be Heather's.
Right.
Because I even noticed that a lot of the – there were a lot of critics' reviews to this, but they all kind of said the same thing. And almost all of them compared it to Heather's. And I was like, okay, yeah, it's in that same genre, I suppose. But I think Heather's is its own standalone.
Right. You
know, like, well, different feeling to it.
I think the definitely different feeling. I think the comparison comes from that you have this sort of outside person. You know, this time it's this girl that's coming into the school for the first time, and is coming into school at all for the first time, really, to this unknown environment where there are these, you know, these three girls, and these three girls are like, you know, the holy trinity at the school. And it's, I think that's where the sort of Heather's comparison comes in, because that's very similar concept.
Right.
Where it diverges a lot is that Heather's goes to a very dark place, you know.
Murder.
Yes. It goes to murder, where this is much more of just sort of a pranky, gonna get even, revenge sort of thing. Humiliation movie, not the dark place, you know?
Right.
So I guess it all depends on what kind of mood you're in to watch. I mean, Heather's to me is sort of a completely different film as well. I don't know if I necessarily agree to compare it, but a lot of people do, because it's easy to do.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's the outsider chick gets in with the popular chicks and then causes takes havoc. Them down. Yeah. And it kind of has that moral of the story that, you know, if you try doing something like this, you're going to end up turning into what you hated to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then you need somebody to save you from that.
And how are you any better? How are you any better if you're trying to take them down?
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, that was the other aspect of this, because, you know, I think it said, you know, Damien says it in one of the interviews, the guy who plays Damien is just like, everybody in this movie is a mean girl. They just don't realize it, you know, until it's too late.
Yeah.
You know, like they learn in the intervention in the gym. You know, which, by the way, was one of the fucking funniest things I've ever seen. The intervention in the gym where they're like, where she's like, Monica, you don't really have buck teeth, but those braces do make your mouth look big. You know, like, and I'm like, wow, you know, they're like all the backhanded compliments.
Yes,
those were some of the best lines in the whole thing, because they're like really trying, and I could totally see if I did this with some of the girls that I work with when they fight or argue. I had an intervention the other day with a female apartment, for example, and in the course of it, you know, they're sitting there giving each other feedback. Oh, don't even ask. But as I was intervening with them, they're like, they're fighting, but not really. Mm-hmm. But it's all the words like, you know, well, if she wouldn't have her friends over all the time kind of stuff, you know, and then the other one's just like, well, if she wouldn't have her friends in my room all the time, well, if she wouldn't have, like, I'm just like, oh my God, just what happened?
Just on top of each other.
Yeah. And I'm just like, no, really, what happened? In the end, I'm like, you know what? It sounds like you two aren't that far off. Maybe you should just go to dinner, you know, and just hash it out. And they looked at me and said, nope.
Nice.
I was like, really? I said, fine, then don't go to dinner. Get some ramen out of the cabinet and take it outside and sit on a towel. I don't care. You know, I was like, but you guys need to work this out. It was just so funny. I was like, oh my gosh, girls are so weird. But at the same time, gay men are the same, so I'm not going to let them.
No, women can't live with them.
Anyway. Do what?
I said women can't live with them.
I'm losing you.
Well, you're sounding fine to me.
Yeah, you sound okay to us, Steven. We lose him again.
I think we might have lost Steven again.
No.
Oh, gotta love that. Anyways, where were we?
I'm trying again.
Yay, he's back.
He's back. Can you hear us better?
Steven?
You.
Oh.
Everything you're saying is.
Well, you sound fine to us, and we sound fine to each other, so.
Yeah, but to me, you guys are just going. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're saying. So,
weird.
You're back now, though.
Okay, welcome back.
Thanks. Well, I thought one of the things, the tools that they use in this movie that was as different from some is that the internal thought bubble kind of stuff that they use in, as one of the stylings of this movie. And I was curious what you guys think about that, because I thought it was smartly done for this film. Mm-hmm. You know, because like she's talking about like for example, the times where she's talking to the guy that she likes and pretending that she's not smart. Mm-hmm. But the whole time she's like
wrong.
Wrong. Nope. Nope. Wrong. Yeah, you know, like that kind of thing in her mind. Or when she's like, you know, her parents were going to ground her, but they didn't even know how to ground her, and she's like talking. She's giving them information, you know, things like that.
Right.
How did you find that? I was wondering if some people though might have found that distracting.
No, it came off pretty natural to me. Yep. I mean, because you're experiencing this world through her, and you kind of want to get to sort of convey that sort of idea and how smart of a girl she actually is. I think that was sort of necessary for her. If she's not going to vocally say, no, you're wrong. This is how you do it. You know what I mean? That it just made sense to do it that way.
Well, I also felt that the movie in some sense was like the movie from beginning to end was actually a flashback. And she was, because at the beginning, didn't she, it basically start off with her narrating about everything. So it's just like, here's the story about Mean Girls.
That's true.
Back on such and such a day. So it just was like, we're watching this with her and she's doing her commentary. Like it's the director commentary or actor commentary of the movie, like right away. So it really felt like that.
That's a good way to think about it. Like the whole thing was from her memory. That makes sense. Yep. Different place. And then I found one of the biggest things, of course, was that damn bus.
Yeah.
That would kept speeding through every time. That bus was like this consistent. I know, right? But like, you know, the bus almost hits Katie. It hits Rachel. It almost hits, you know, well, in her dream, it hits the three junior plastics.
Right.
So this bus, like, what do you think the bus was trying to say? You know, and the funny, and I have to tell you, even though I see it, I've seen this movie 10 times or so, every time Rachel gets hit by the bus, I can't handle it. I laugh.
It's one of those things where you just kind of go, oh my God.
Right, exactly.
Haven't you ever had that moment where there's somebody who you just wish would get hit by a bus?
There you go.
You know, that's basically what this is basically it's her, you know, id, ego. I don't know which part of the mind it is, but, you know, it's something just representing that. Yeah, I want you to get hit by a bus because you're mean, evil. Sorry, melodic, Rachel, or Gina. I hate you so much. So
it's very Ally McBeal.
That's true. Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So it was just kind of, I think,
about that time when Ally McBeal was on too. So
it would have been a couple years after it was off. So, but yeah, you know, that kind of humor. That's what it reminds me of, especially when it's a dream sequence where she just sort of hallucinates and sees whatever, you know. Sees the bus hitting the junior plastics.
Yeah, that's funny. Mm-hmm. Well, and the burn book I always laugh at the burn book too, because I remember, gosh, like in sixth grade-ish or so, we kind of had a burn book.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about it was, it wasn't that kind of burn book. The burn books we had, it was like these questions. Mm-hmm. Each question was on a separate page, and you had to answer it, and the question would never be actually in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So like it would be like, who has the smelliest breath? And so all you would look on this page, and it would have all these people's names, or it would have like one person's name consistently, and it was just awful. You know, like
it was, interesting.
It was, we had this kind of thing. We called it a burn book too. So I always laugh when I see the burn book.
Yeah. See, I don't remember ever having a burn book, but then again, you know, and one of the things I thought I had put it in the notes here, but I didn't. We didn't have a burn book, but I was part of the burnouts, I say, would be my group. And that was what I was going to ask you guys, was what lunch table would you have been sitting at? Because I know when they do when she comes into the cafeteria, like every table is like a different demographic of high school life. You know, there's the jocks, there's the plastics, there's the nerds, there's, you know, the Asian kid, the smart Asian kids, the popular Asian kids.
I just had my own group of people, so yeah. It was. And in some sense, none of us were jocks. We were basically kind of theater-ish type people, artsy.
So you were the theater geeks. People,
theater geeks. But it was only like a portion of the theater geeks.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Oh, I think. Mm-hmm. I would have wanted to be at the hot Asians table because they sounded like they were having the most fun.
Yeah.
But I probably would have been at, oh gosh, that's hard. I kind of got along with a lot of groups because I was in the math. I was in like the AP classes. And
that's social suicide.
I know. But I was also an athlete. So I wouldn't have been at the jock table.
Yeah.
But I would have been at like the B-sport table.
Gotcha. Because
there probably would have been a B-sport table.
Have been at the varsity table. You would have been at the
No. I wasn't a football player or cheerleader, that kind of thing. I was a swimmer and a thrower for shot put. So uh-huh. I would have been those kind of things. But and I probably went a little of the at the Damien and Janice table too.
Gotcha.
Because I was kind of one of those people. It's like somebody from swim team would be sitting there, a friend from theater would be sitting there, and some girl that I knew from bowling would be sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and so it would just be a weird table. We were kind of the catch-all table.
Yeah. See, I was very much in like the burnout table until I started playing around in bands, and then once I started playing in bands, you always sat with like whoever had the same lunch period as you, that like, you know, like me and the one guitarist would always sit together, and you know, we had our own little group there. But yeah, I was very much into the burnout table, I would say. Yeah. Long hair, staring black,
at the food.
Long hair, black concert t-shirt, jeans.
Nerds. Fair enough. Nerds. Well, the I think there was one other thing that I was curious about. Perceptions. No, not really. I forgot we talked about the compliments already.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I'd probably did either of you have kind of a favorite scene or sequence? I was just curious from this movie. About when the, like, I have to say, like, I totally was not expecting when I first saw it, like when the hot Asians mm-hmm. were fighting.
Yeah. No, that was
and
good.
What she does. What she does, we're not going to tell you. You have to see the movie.
Yeah.
What they say in Korean or Vietnamese. Yeah. It was Vietnamese. Yeah.
I don't know if I had a particular like favorite scene. I mean, I was just sort of enamored with the movie in general and just was sort of liked the fact that I kept trying to catch them to see if they made any mistakes as far as like the setting. You know, so like when they would mention something that was particular to the North Shore or to Chicago, I would always kind of like pay close attention to see like, oh, is that, you know, are they going to screw it up or whatever? Things like the business card that the guy from the Mathletes hands out. You know, it's got the area code from the Northern Burbs on there. You know, so it's like, okay, well, that's right. You know, So I just kept kind of looking for that stuff.
And when Tina Fey was like, "Oh, I bartend down at PJ McFlaherty's or whatever," was that something real or was that a joke?
You know what? I'd have to remember exactly what the what the name of the bar
she
was.
She looked like a TGI Fridays kind of thing, but I was wondering. If I'm curious. But the you know, just some of the words that they chose, like in that scene, for example, when she was like, "Oh no, I bartend a couple nights a week down at the PJ McFlaherty or wherever," she said, and then as she walks away, Janice is like, "Oh dear God, that's sad," you know, like kind of thing, you know, like I would totally be Tina Fey as a teacher, because that would be how my life would be.
Gotcha.
You know, when the one guy comes in and is like, "So how was your summer?" "Oh well, I got divorced." "Oh."
Yeah. Ooh.
You know, like "Oh." And then she was just like, "Oh, you have a new student from Africa. Welcome. I'm from Michigan." Yeah. That was like,
I like that.
You know, just stuff like that. Like her character was totally funny. And I would totally do exactly what she did to Katie. Be like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Did you want to buy some drugs?" You know, like, I would totally be that. Yeah, I would totally be that.
Awesome.
So, yeah. So, what did we learn?
Well, wouldn't you like my favorite part of the movie?
Oh, yeah. I thought you said, "I'm sorry."
I didn't say anything. You guys were talking and talking. Just leaving me out of it. Anyways, I actually kind of like
Gretchen, it's not going to happen.
Like the Ed and Mathlete scene.
Oh, yeah.
She's trying to remember the answer to the question, so she's thinking back and is like, "Oh, what was he talking about? What was on the board behind him?"
Oh, he's so cute, you know.
So, anyways, that's my favorite. In any case, here's what we've learned from Mean Girls. We've learned foot cream smells like peppermint. Halloween is the one night of the year when a girl can dress like a total slut and no other girls can say anything about it. Everyone in Africa knows Swedish. Friends who really hate you are called freighters. High schoolers are freaks, or homeschoolers are freaks, excuse me. High schoolers are freaks too, but that's another matter altogether. Jumbo tampons are helpful when you have a heavy flow and wide set vagina. Ew. Don't have sex because you'll get pregnant and die. It's kind of difficult on the pregnant part of it. And that's so fetch. That is what we learned from Mean Girls. I was surprised at how much I didn't run and hide for this movie. The quotient was so low and the writing was so clever. How can you not like this movie? I loved it. Watch it now.
Yeah. Like I said, can you believe that I've never seen this before? I really thought it was funny. And of course, it's set in the North Shore of Chicago. So what's not to like about that? It's definitely reminiscent of Heathers. Just not as dark. I definitely would recommend it to anybody who's a fan of that genre.
I just say that it's a great update of Heathers with Tina Fey intelligence, which I think is amazing. Great characters, smart writing, solid acting from a young cast, which is also a good thing, as well as some super memorable cameos from the SNL greats of that time, like Amy Poehler's tit being eaten by her dog and her not even knowing it. That's hilarious. But definitely worth watching and reminiscing about the good, well, maybe just days of high school if you didn't really have any good days of high school. But I think that what you said, Ray, about, you know, like when you're looking at it, you're like, which table were you at? Which this was, you know, like I think all of that stuff is totally what is worth seeing this movie for.
Right.
And it, you know, it's a fun way of doing it without being completely over the top. It's not another teen movie kind of that stuff. It's just very smartly written, intelligent. And you're like, Gretchen Wienert's dad, toaster strudels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then the other girl, I'm getting her name all of a sudden, but the other girl who's just like wanting to make out with her first cousin.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, what the hell? Yeah. Like,
she's just the stupid one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So who, I was wondering too, just randomly, do we have a decision on who would be who of the plastics?
Oh, dear God.
Curious.
No, I have no idea. I don't know if I'm... I guess I could be mean enough to be Regina.
I know I can be mean enough to be Regina.
Yeah. <He's> like, I'm going to have to fight it out.
I think you're... Okay, maybe we'll do this. If we wanted to, I'll be Regina. You be Gretchen. Jeff is okay. Definitely Karen.
Gee, thanks. I love you, too. Let's find out where this ranks in Flick Chart for us. Start off with Mean Girls versus Ocean's 13.
Mean Girls.
Mean Girls versus Jumanji.
Mean Girls.
Mean Girls versus 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Mean Girls.
Ooh, completely different.
I would say I would probably pick Mean Girls.
I would prefer to watch Mean Girls, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This might be a little tricky. Mean Girls versus Spaceballs.
Ooh.
I'm the Spaceballs guy on this one. I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah, I would say Spaceballs, but...
I probably would, too. I think Spaceballs is fair.
Spaceballs versus... Or Spaceballs. Mean Girls versus Rain Man.
Mean Girls for me.
Yeah, Mean Girls.
Mean Girls versus Top Gun.
Ooh.
You know, the funny thing is, somebody made that comparison and said that Top Gun really is just the same thing as Mean Girls.
Oh, really?
Yes.
It's true, I guess.
I don't know. You know what? I'm going to go with Mean Girls.
I'm going to go with Top Gun. You make the decision, Jeff.
Oh, frick. I think I'm going to go Mean Girls on that one. Mean Girls versus The Sound of Music.
Oh, The Sound of Music.
Mean Girls for me, but that's...
I actually have to decide now. Damn it, this is like two in a row. What's going on? As much as I love Sound of Music, I prefer to see Mean Girls. So Mean Girls is number 11 on our Flick Chart. Oh. Just short of the top 10. In the meantime, let's go into another movie here in the present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
Resident Evil Retribution. 29% rotten, 60% audience, directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, Mia Jovovich, blah, 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 yada, yada, etc., etc. Who cares? Doesn't matter. Seriously. You know, I have to say, up to Afterlife, I was like, hey, you know, they're fun movies. They're awesome, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then this movie came along.
Yeah, it's just losing its luster.
The action was okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the acting was okay.
Wait, there was acting in this movie?
Not much, but still. honestly, I didn't really understand the point of having the death girl that you had assigned to. I mean, it was interesting. It was neat to see Mia know how to sign, but you know, it didn't really spark any additional oomph or anything. Mm-hmm. So it could have just been a girl who could hear just fine and not have to sign at all. So,
well, the sort of interesting part of that is that element of having this little girl who can't hear could have been used, especially in a zombie movie, a scary film, when you have a character who can't hear the thing sneaking up behind them, where you could see it sneaking up behind them and they can't hear it, and you're yelling at the screen to turn around. Oh my God, it's going to get you. Like, they totally could have done that and they didn't. But that seems to be the theme, I think, of this movie, is there's so many things that they could have done and it was just meh.
This was almost like an actual, like a actual representation of a video game. You start her off in one place and you have to get her from point A to point B.
True.
Defeat bosses along the way, you know, and it's like move into the Moscow.
That's true.
Have you guys played the original Resident Evil?
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember
back in the days?
Do you remember it?
Got it. It's been a long time. I used to play. I played this and Silent Hill. Were like two of my favorite, you know, early ones. But that's been. Since it was PlayStation 1. It's like
when I saw this with my friend, the one thing that we talked about when we got out of the movie was that, because I mean, I remember like not particularly liking or wanting to go see like the 2, 3, and 4 Resident Evil movies, but I ultimately sort of enjoyed them on some level. Like,
you had a good time.
Yeah.
But not a great movie, but he at least had a good time.
This movie, the main problem was, like, I didn't have a problem with any of the action sequences for the most part, especially the actual hand-to-hand melee combat. That was enjoyable. But everything else, like the dialogue, I don't know if it was – we were trying to decide if it was on purpose that it was delivered so poorly. And my friend's theory is that this movie –
because they're clones?
No, he said that he believes that the reason that this movie exists is to sort of masturbate the Japanese fans, because all of the characters in it are dressed almost exactly like their characters in particular games, like almost exactly. So it's like he's like, oh, this is totally made for the Japanese. This is not a movie made for Americans.
Well, and you saw that it was premiered in Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, this movie was really geared for Japan.
If you remember the way the dialogue was delivered in the original Resident Evil game, it was very similar to how the voice acting is done and the delivery is done in this movie. Very sort of wooden and just sort of delivered as like somebody reading it off a page, like blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. I remember the DS. I had the DS game too.
Mm-hmm.
So bad.
So I did think though that I thought the opening sequence, the whole thing in reverse, I thought that was pretty cool. I liked the way that happened.
Was a waste of my time.
Yeah. Well, me and my friend both liked it. So, what I heard was a waste of time, so I didn't bother. Was I heard that the 3D was like pretty much non-existent in this film.
I didn't see the 3D. Couldn't see it. It was only playing in like 2 times. The 3D, or it was IMAX, and I was like, oh, I'm not paying $18 to see this.
I saw the 3D, and it was the subtle 3D stuff, so you really couldn't. The 3D was there, but you didn't really notice it. It just kind of merges into the scene.
The test now since I have a 3D set up at home, one of the tests that you can do is if you take the glasses off and you're looking at the screen, if the screen looks normal,
it's not 3D.
It's not going to give you a 3D effect. If it's to the point where you see a lot of ghosting when you take your glasses off, then the 3D effect should be pretty prominent in what you're seeing. So if you, I read a review where a guy was like, yeah, I took my glasses off and it was like, hey, this movie's like in 2D. Like, there's not even any ghosting on any of the characters or anything. So at that point I was like, yeah, I'm not going to spend the money on 3D. And it seemed like all the showings around here, I had like two showings I could go to that weren't in 3D. It was like the exact opposite. I was like, ugh, I'm not paying the money.
Kind of had a similar one thing, although if I just waited like 20 minutes, I would have been able to see the 2D. The theater I went to was showing kind of both of them simultaneously.
Gotcha.
Sorry, we're having a storm here.
Ah, that would explain the ins and outs.
I'm just hearing the thunder and the light. I'm seeing the lightning and thunder, and it's just starting to come down. It's like, gotcha. Oh, this is probably why our internet sucks tonight. Sorry about that. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you guys on all of that. Like the, I found it to be very much like a clip show before the final episode of something. Yeah. Like, because there was so much flashback in this one. Like, because if you know, I mean, like, clearly they did some of the best scenes from previous movies is really what it kind of felt like. And brought back all these characters that resolved, you know, you resolved what happened to them. Mm-hmm. Either they were captured or killed or cloned, basically. And you understand now why Umbrella was doing what they were doing. Mm-hmm. In a lot of things. I mean, so a lot of stuff was clarified in this. So it felt like you were watching, you know, you watched the entire season of Survivor or RuPaul's Drag Race, and then they're going to do this one right before the finale where they announce the winner.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
So it was kind of a best of and all that stuff. But I do admit that I thought the girl fights in this one were freaking awesome. Like, for serious, like the Jill Valentine versus Alice. Come on, tell me that was not epic.
It was good.
And then when Michelle Rodriguez roided up, come on. She was kicking the shit out of those two guys.
The only problem I had, I think, with the Michelle Rodriguez fight was that I was like, it seemed like it was going on forever at that point. And I don't, because it was towards the end of the movie, and I think I was kind of ready for the movie to be over.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, she keeps fighting. Somebody's got to end this.
So she does with the punch to the gut.
Yeah. So I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah, I mean, the plot is not... Well, you know what? One interesting... I'll bring up an interesting point. Mm-hmm. I found this interesting. The little girl.
Yes.
I did. And finding out in research, and you can read in there, I found out that there was no intention for the little girl to be hearing impaired.
Okay.
What ended up happening was they found all these little girls that they were interested in having in the movie, and they found her... And she happened to be hearing impaired. They were like, she was the best. We wanted her, and so they placed her in the movie.
Oh, well, that's cool. Just threw in the side thing.
It just happened. She just happens to be hearing impaired because the actress is really hearing impaired.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool.
So,
not that she's hearing impaired is cool. That's just the fact.
But that would at least explain it. And honestly, as I said. The fact that she was hearing impaired really had no additional thing for the movie.
Right. It just
and like it was only because just explains that that's the only reason why it was on there. So that's why it's not a plot point.
Right. And they didn't really harp on it. It was just like, okay, she's hearing impaired. Let's go.
Right.
Yep.
So
yeah, I think it's fine.
I thought that was interesting, but I thought that was interesting because you still don't see very much of that in casting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you still look at it from like the Broadway, the Broadway unions kind of way where it's like, okay, if it's an Asian, it must be an Asian that you hire for this role. Or if this person is this, they have to be a this. But we don't. It didn't happen in this role. You know, there's really only one other role that I've seen that happen in. What was that movie where Linda Hunt, I'm going to forget the name of it, where Linda Hunt played the man.
Okay. Oh
gosh, I know what it is. I just thought about it the other day, but anyway, I'll think about it. Okay. But that's one we need to put on there sometime. Cause we're Linda Hunt. Cause it made me think of it. Cause I watched, Ready to Wear. For some reason the other night. I know, I hadn't seen it in a long time. And I saw Linda Hunt, and so I looked her up, and I was like, oh my gosh, she played a man. She won an Oscar for playing a man. Mm-hmm. That was so cool. But that was a role for a man who originally a man was hired for, and then she dropped out. Or he dropped out, and she dropped out. The role. Yeah. So, anyway. Beside the point. Has nothing to do with Resident Evil.
It's more interesting, though.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Yeah. So what did the critics say?
Oh, yes. Sorry, I forgot that part. On the positive end, while the director explains all in the end, it's clear that the big, full-blown nutty days are still to come. Basically, that, you know, there's got to be one more movie that just blows up the earth. You know what I mean? Like, there's got to be something that ends it. And that Anderson knows how to do a great fight sequence.
True.
Negatives were same old, same old. Got tired of the slow-mo. Flimsy plot structure. Apparently zombie hordes have taken over the world, but there's an endless supply of black leather unitards. Thought that was funny. And at last, we thought Alice might say we survived, but no. That's really what they had to say. Nothing really outstanding. And a lot of just, bored me to sleep. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So, what we've learned from Resident Evil Retribution, if you can learn anything from this, we've learned this is Alice, and it's her world.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to escape a zombie menace, go into the dark subway tunnels. Rain's sister is not very nice. Rain's sister? I don't get that one.
It's with a little girl. Rain is Michelle Rodriguez's character.
Gotcha.
And she turns to the good Rain, and she's like, I met your sister. She's not very nice. Very
nice. And clones wear leather unitards. And that is what we've learned from Resident Evil Retribution. Well, yeah, this is a first. Usually, I'm pretty good with an RE movie. Does something interesting, and I enjoy myself. And this didn't. For the first time, I'm just tired of Resident Evil movies, and they're going to do another one? Thanks,
maybe.
Paul W.S. Anderson, but you need to stop right now. No more cliffhangers at the end of movies. It's enough.
This just confirms my suspicions that every single one of these movies since the first one has been made for the sole purpose of masturbating Japanese fans. The dialogue's delivered horribly. The acting was not even passable. But if you take this and watch the dialogue from the first Resident Evil games, it's almost exactly the same. I stay away unless you're a crazy diehard fan, and this may make you not a crazy diehard fan anymore. And everyone else needs to, I think you just need to skip the 3D like everyone told me. I think Paul W.S. Anderson needs to thank his wife for being in all these movies. <He's good.
laughs> You have a point there.
Yeah.
As I said before, I think it's just kind of a best of moments from a previous film. So it had that kind of clip show feel. While it isn't Shakespeare, it's good for what it is. And the fight scenes were freaking awesome. I'm owning it. Michelle Rodriguez roaring up to fight two guys and the fight between Alice and Jill were both pretty damn epic. Honestly, I was hoping they would end it. I really did. I was hoping that this would be the end of it. But I guess we'll have to wait and see if there will actually be a sixth installment, because it's on record that the sixth installment will be determined on how well this does overall. That's on record, Paul W. Sanderson. Okay. So we'll have to see. Yeah. And I promise that if there is a sixth, that I won't put it on the movies. For us to watch.
Might have to watch it just to maybe outside of it just to say it's like, yes, they finally ended the damn thing.
Exactly. Maybe we'll watch it on DVD.
Let's say, wait until it's a past movie.
But since we have had to see the last two. But yeah.
And that's... Let's move into the future.
Hi. Welcome to the future. And I'm telling you, it's great here.
Oz, the Great and Powerful. Releasing March 8th, 2013. Directed by Sam Raimi. Starring Mila Kunis, James Franco, Michelle Williams, and Rachel Weisz. Sam Raimi's film is set before the events of the 1939 film and the original book, when Oscar Diggs, a small-time circus magician with dubious ethics, is hurled away from dusty Kansas to the vibrant land of Oz. He thinks he's hit the jackpot. Fame and fortune are his for the taking. That is until he meets the witches Theodora, Evanora, and Glinda, who are not convinced he is the great wizard everyone's been expecting. Reluctantly drawn into the epic problems facing the Land of Oz and its inhabitants, Oscar must find out who is good, who is evil before it's too late, putting his magical arts to use through illusion, ingenuity, and even a bit of wizardry. Oscar transforms himself not only into the great and powerful Wizard of Oz, but into a better man as well.
Yep. We've been talking about this film for quite some time, mm-hmm. on and off. As it says, you know, when we first heard about this movie, they had pegged Robert Downey Jr. for playing it, and I think we were all pretty excited about that prospect.
I could totally see him being this a conniving mm-hmm. kind of guy with a good heart.
Yeah, but he already does that. His name is Tony Stark.
Yeah,
he
plays a good anti-hero.
Yeah.
You know. And then again, we heard about Johnny Depp, that they were thinking about him. Now, whether or not they ever actually approached him, or it was just like, I always think sometimes these casting rumors are like reports back from a meeting where a bunch of people with the film went, who would we like to get for this? You know, and they go, oh, we'd love to have Johnny Depp in this. And somebody like a secretary is like, they're talking about putting Johnny Depp in the movie. You know,
here's $5,000 from the Inquirer.
You know, and I do remember being slightly disappointed, I think, when we heard that James Franco was going to be in it. But I think we had just saw Your Highness or something. So I was kind of like anti-James Franco at the time. Like, ugh, no.
Then we ended up seeing Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Right. And that sort of redeemed him in my eyes somewhat. So really? Mm-hmm. A little bit.
I didn't think I think I remember saying that I didn't realize it was James Franco in that movie, but
yeah.
I'm just surprised they didn't choose somebody like Will Smith or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's true. It could have gone a lot of ways. I still wish it was Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, I think it would have been fun to see him in that role. You know. But I mean, this is one of the movies like The Wizard of Oz, and it's sort of sacrilegious to say it, and I'm giving a little bit of my excitement away already, but The Wizard of Oz is one of those films, like they've attempted to bring us back into Oz. There's been mini series and movies set in that sort of Oz universe, but we've never actually really gotten, I think, the full motion picture treatment of the Oz for quite a long time. And The Wizard of Oz...
I think Diana Ross did a great job as Dorothy.
Well, that's what I said, quite a while. The Wizard of Oz has always been one of those universes that I've always thought would benefit somewhat from a remake or a reboot or at least another shot. The great thing about the Oz universe is there's so many more tales other than The Wizard of Oz to tell. Mm-hmm.
There's so much else going around.
Right.
Right.
They did have a couple other stories. I mean, there was like what was it? Because there was the one with the guy with the jack-o'-lantern head.
Right.
Dorothy of Oz or Return to Oz or something like
Return
that.
Return to Oz. And then there was Tin Man.
Tin Man was kind of cool.
Yeah. So there's always been these little dips and weaves back into the universe. But again, I've always been sort of wishing that we would get the full-on sort of...
Well, they're still talking about the Wicked movie.
Mm-hmm.
But that's which, still
I mean, I realize that's right. Oh, right. I know that, but I'm just saying there's still all this interest in the world.
Right, the universe. Of Oz.
Yeah, well, that universe. And they could just be, this may be the precursor. And, you know, they're making a series and they're starting out with Oz the Great and Powerful. And then a couple years down the line, they'll do Wizard of Oz and just remake the whole darn thing.
No.
It'll be interesting to have to see what they do for the Tin Man, Scarecrow, and the Cowardly Lion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because previously it was a costume, but now maybe it's going to be more. The Cowardly Lion's going to be more CG. Is actually going to be a CG character or something that's motion captured or something.
Well, that was the one thing that in the trailer kind of threw me a little bit.
Because
In the trailer that we watch here, you see that they're definitely using CG characters for sure. And that was the one thing about me that when I first was looking at this, I was like, I'm kind of skeptical, because I'm not saying do it exactly how the original was shot.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like on the soundstage, just the same way, but. I don't know if it's good to go that far into making stuff that's creating those new little things and stuff like that. It just, I don't know if it's taking it too far from the universe we know.
I think you could do something very much like the Chronicles of Narnia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like the first Narnia movie did a very good job of blending practical makeup effects and CG. So you could take something like the Cowardly Lion, and you could do his face and his body with, you know, practical makeup, which they can do a hell of a lot better job now than they could back when The Wizard of Oz was made.
Yeah, and then, absolutely.
Instead of having a tail that's pulled around by a string that you can see flying around on the film, you could do, you know, a CG tail that'll give it a lot more movement, you know, and things like that. I think things could be enhanced very well with CG. They don't need to be completely done. Although in this day and age, it's a lot cheaper to do something with CG sometimes than it is to do practically. So
it's just that I worry about certain things, like, you know, it was a big deal for the 39 Wizard of Oz and the flying monkeys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a big deal then. But it looks like immediately we see from the trailer that there would be something. I don't know if those were monkeys we see in the trailer or not flying from.
They look pretty monkey-like.
Yeah, but it's just like, but they're definitely giving them an update to look better.
I'm sure.
Clearly better than the 1939.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, I lose the nostalgia.
Mm-hmm. When's the last time you watched the Wizard of Oz?
Oh, God, it's been... I mean, we used to watch it every year when it used to come on CBS.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But I can't say for sure when the last time was I popped it in.
The Wizard of Oz was one of the first Blu-rays that I watched on my new home theater system.
Really?
Oh, yeah, cool. Because it had just come out on Blu-ray. And
my mom has it on Blu-ray. Yeah,
they had restored it and everything, and I popped it in and I watched the whole thing and it was great. But wow, watching it on Blu-ray, especially on a really large screen, it really shows like how that was made. Like I could totally tell that, you know, we're totally on a soundstage, and I can see that back wall that's painted to look like it's going off into the distance,
right?
You know, to the Emerald City. I can see the yellow brick road come up to a wall, and I can see the seam in the wall. You know, so there's definitely a lot of that when you watch it again. Like you could tell in the Blu-ray that like the flowers are all made out of plastic and are painted, and you know that all comes through on this, but.
Well, you know what I mean, though. I'm not saying film it like that.
Right, I understand.
But it's difficult to go from a guy in a monkey suit with wings to a fully realized CG, like, monkey with bat wings that's going to be like, rah! You know, like, or something. Yeah. When it's the prequel. Yeah. It's just a difficult, you know, like, I feel like we lose the evolution. But, fair I mean, enough. It's the same thing from, I mean, Star Wars did the same thing. So I can't, you know, we went from puppet Yoda to a prequel that had, you know, CG Yoda.
So we went from puppet Yoda to really bad puppet Yoda to CG Yoda.
That's true. But but I guess that, it is what it is. But I just wish that I hope that they give more nods to nostalgia of the movie, mm-hmm. and that, rather than just completely develop a whole new universe that just has a feeling of Oz.
Yep.
That's all.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Totally gotcha.
But it is being filmed in 3D, mm-hmm. full on 3D. Filmed in 3D, right? Which is interesting. And and Sam Raimi is saying that they did use information from L. Frank Baum's book, so it's going to actually be a nod lovingly to the 1939 classic.
Mm-hmm.
Is what they say. So. Sweet. It'll be interesting to see. But it does look really good. And you know what? I'm extremely excited about the cast. That's a good group of witches. Like the women that are going to be played. That's going to be real interesting to see where they go with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope Mila Kunitz ends up being the really bad witch.
Nice.
Because I think she could go there, you know?
Right. Okay. Sweet.
Mm-hmm. So, our excitement for this movie. Well, honestly, I don't have much to say about this. It's a prequel to The Wiz, and for some reason, they decided not to get another Richard Pryor. I really don't see why. In any case, looks fun, and it's
You're
looking
stupid.
So different than The Wiz.
Yeah.
You're stupid.
Yeah. I'm super excited to see this. Like I said before, I've always thought that even though it would sort of be sacrilege to do it, this is one movie that me and like my sister, we've always been like, it would be so awesome if they could just like update The Wizard of Oz and make a modern remake of it. But I am glad that they went the prequel route. So they don't really have to commit to messing with any of The Wizard of Oz. So I'm sort of excited to see that, see what they can do. Franco's still riding quote unquote high in my head since Planet of the Apes. So let's hope he keeps it up.
Right now it just comes off way more fantastical than the original movie, and it's going to be interesting to see how they interplay the original mythology in the prequel. The female cast of witches seems like a solid group of actors, so I hope that Franco is able to hold his own and doesn't just act like he's high the whole time. In my world, in my small little world, Franco is just above Shia. So maybe this is going to be the opportunity that he has to step it up like Shia did in Lawless.
Right.
Maybe.
Oh. And yes, I'm just joking. As I said, I don't have to say about this. So to give myself something to say, it's a joke about The Wiz. That's it. That's the end of the show.
It's you're pretty. Jeff is pretty.
I'm pretty.
Want to pet your head. You're pretty.
Anyways, next week we're going into the past for Breaking to Electric Boogaloo. Why did I pick that?
We'll see. I don't know. Every time I turn on my...
Oh, wait a minute. I know why I picked it. They watched it for Film Sac, and I'm like, dude, oh. We got to watch this.
So I'm like, every time I turn on my Netflix on my Blu-ray player, and it pops up as... It's like it's right there in the first like five movies of my instant queue.
Right.
And I'm like, I just stare at it. I just go, and why?
With our selection of movies and throwing stuff like this in here, it must really throw our Netflix. But that's the kind of the point in the show, and plus finally we get to watch the movie which brought the something to Electric Boogaloo.
Mm-hmm.
That's where that joke came from. Also, not much is going on, so in the present we're going to be taking a look at Dread, which actually I've heard some people say it's actually pretty good. Okay. We'll see. And also in the couldn't find anything else better. We're also going to be taking a look at Gaby in the future. So that's next week.
Never even heard of it.
But we'll see. So plenty of ways to contact us. Pop over to our website, COMovies.com. Leave a comment on the blog. Shoot us an email at COMovies@gmail.com. Leave us voicemail at 361-265-8255. We'd love to hear your voice on this show. Also, pop over to Twitter, twitter.com/COLmovies, Facebook at facebook.com/COLmovies, where we get a lot of bunch of stuff on there. You guys do post a bunch of stuff. Any highlights from this past?
Nothing? Not especially. I know Fuzz did post the question about what's your favorite girl movie. You know, that like girl-on-girl fight movie or high school girl movie.
Right.
So definitely we're interested in hearing, you know, what people say.
Yep. I also threw the thing on there about James Bond. Does anybody has a favorite Bond song?
Good call. Yeah. Yes, you did. I remember that now.
Yep.
It's Adele is singing this one.
Yep.
That'll be good.
Mm-hmm.
I think
Troy Westfalls commented he loved Live and Let Die. But what is your favorite James Bond theme?
As cheesy as it is, it's probably because it's my first Bond movie that I have memory of watching is Sheena Easton's For Your Eyes Only.
For Your Eyes.
Yeah.
I was also very much into that one too.
I gotta always, I'm always going for Duran Duran. Yeah. And A View to a Kill. I am such a Duran Duran nut. I was a Duran Duran nut as a kid, and I have everything from them. A View to a Kill, because I always have that image of Grace Jones jumping off of the off of the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
So,
see, I'm kind of with you on the For Your Eyes Only, but I have the thing that I. Just for some reason, I love Tina Turner's GoldenEye.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow Never Dies was really fun. I have to put some sort of props to The World Is Not Enough because it was done by Garbage, my favorite band in all the world.
Right.
And, I mean, Goldfinger. Goldfinger, Diamonds Forever, Moonraker, all three of those were done by the illustrious Shirley Bassey.
Right.
So, bowing down to Shirley Bassey. I mean, amazing, amazing voices. But I think most of the ones that I like are sung by women. But we have like From Russia with Love by Matt Monro. And Live and Let Die is awesome and is fun. But something about it's not really Bond theme-ish to me.
Well, it's something about Bond and his connection with women.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I mean, that makes a whole lot of sense for like a haunting female song. Yeah,
and I posted that on my personal Facebook. I got a little bit more interaction with some people, like my friend Bill. You know, he said Goldfinger's on rotation on his iPod. GoldenEye is on rotation on his. I think all the Shirley ones are great, but I love Bjork's cover of You Only Live Twice. So if you ever get a chance, it's on my Facebook. I had posted a link to it. If you ever get a chance to hear it, it's awesome.
Which is originally done by Nancy Sinatra.
Yep.
And why do I know all this? Because I have every single one of these songs. but I mean, some of the thing is that like the newer Bond movies with the Daniel Craig, those two, the Casino Royale one, which was.
Chris Cornell.
Chris Cornell. And then the last one, which was Another Day to Die, I believe it's called.
The White Stripes and Alicia Keys.
Where is it? Another Way to Die, I think it is. Mm-hmm. There it is. Jack White and Alicia Keys is the credit. I mean, they're nice, and they have very much still continued the tone, but it sounds very, very modern. So it's interesting. And Adele's probably going to do the same thing. And Adele's voice is going to have that, you know, melodic sort of tone that we're looking for a Bond film too. So I think that sounds like a good choice.
Oh, there's so many good Bond. I could talk for an hour about Bond music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, away from that, just in my, I guess my last, are we in final thoughts? Did we make it past
We're also on Google Plus at gplus.tv/COLmovies.
Do you
post pretty much the same thing they post Facebook to Gplus?
Oh, I thought they connected.
No.
Oops.
There's no way to connect those. So.
Oops. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I haven't been doing that because of that reason.
So I thought it was like Twitter.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. But as far as I'm super excited because the Spooky Empire is coming up again here in about a month, the Horror Con. And I got picked to be a volunteer, which I'm very excited about. I don't know what my assignment's going to be yet, but I'm going to be volunteering. And I also found out that my friend who is on Ghost Hunters International, and who I've known for about 6 or 7 years now, when he used to do some stuff for us at school, Scott Tepperman, he's the one who sounds, if you ever watch Ghost Hunters International, he's the one that sounds like he's from straight out of New York. He's going to be at the show this year. So I'm really excited. So I get to see Scott, and hopefully I'll get to meet some Steve and Tango and those guys a little bit behind the scenes, maybe. But I'm excited because right now they have everybody from Rose McGowan's coming. Robert Englund's going to be there. A couple of the Walking Dead people, of course. Tom Savini, John Kassir, just to name a few people. So very excited. So if you're in, if you're interested in a really good horror con, it's going to be the weekend of the 25th, 26th, 27th in Orlando at the Orlando Hilton. Look up spookyempire.com. S-P-O-O-K-Y empire.com. So check it out. Should be fun. And I'll be volunteering on Friday and Saturday.
Excellent. Maybe more cuts?
Perhaps, hopefully. If I have time. I can't do it when I'm volunteering. I'm not allowed to be enjoying the con when I have my volunteer shirt on. But trust, as soon as I'm done volunteering, the con shirt's coming off.
You'll be enjoying yourself as soon as your shirt comes off.
Right, exactly.
Oh, and additional final thought. I had an Australian Cub visit. If you listen to Cubs Out Loud, you probably remember Cookie from the Cubby House, who had visited us. He was in town for a couple of days, and we went to the Alamo Draft House and saw Finding Nemo 3D.
Aww.
Not worth it.
Did they have?
It's worth it to see Finding Nemo again in the theaters. Mm-hmm. So it's totally worth that just for that. But the 3D, it was not a 3D like a Toy Story 3 3D where it really did give an enhancement. I didn't even notice that there was 3D. I was wearing glasses, but didn't notice any 3D. So a little disappointed in that. But I mean, even spending the extra bucks for a 3D movie to go see Finding Nemo in the theater again, I think that's worth it. What do you think?
I'm just waiting for it to come on Blu-ray so I can buy them all in 3D here. So. Well, my Blu-ray player lets you crank the 3D. Like, you can adjust how much depth it is. So a lot of times, even if there isn't a lot of 3D in it, you can sort of force it. Yeah.
And that's it.
Yep.
That's the show. So with that, for me, for Fuzz, for Steven... For Steven.
I'm here.
Take care, everyone.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, kid.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.